You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
So last week, while you were away, Dan, we had a hard time, or I did, with corralling the show. And so we had a meeting.
I assume that was Billy, right? That's Billy's fault?
No, it was just what? A general. We were
it
all,
was me, Dan.
What is that supposed to mean?
It's my fault.
We were all on Zoom, and so I was trying to figure out a way, how do we signal to everyone, we've begun where you can start doing show. And so I bought one of the, or actually I didn't, our tremendous production team, Hildy and Kristen, decided to get me a prop to signal when the show can begin. When we're eligible to record on video and audio, there will be no let's leave this behind. We're good to go. So I would like to signal the beginning of today's show with an official action.
Wow. Okay. I love this. Jessica does not love it. She's making a face at you. You seem to enjoy
that. Right next to her head also.
And Jessica seemed to think it was lame, but it was old-timey in a way. Happy Greg Cody Thursday. Greg Cody is really old-timey. He came in here today.
Greg.
And he greeted me with a Y-I-Oughta. And we were trying to figure out where that came from.
Tread lightly, Dan.
Jackie Gleason or the Three Stooges or the Marx Brothers, the Y-I-Oughta.
Y-I-Oughta.
I feel it was like Three Stooges in that one.
I feel so. Like it was. Yeah. I feel like it was Jackie Gleason. I feel like it was the Honeymooners. Regardless, it's very old, and Greg Cody is bringing the old around here. But Jessica, what are you objecting to?
I'm not objecting to it. It's actually a good idea. It's just that Witty with the hat and the glasses right now is giving me Steven Spielberg vibes.
Okay, good vibes for you to be giving off.
Fine vibes.
This is my directorial debut, so why not?
I was watching just yesterday. Couldn't believe vibes. How it held up. One of the Raiders of the Ark, Lost Ark movies in 1984, and I was amazed that 40 years ago, Steven Spielberg was able to make something giant that, while, you know, it's not what Avatar is going to be by James Cameron in 2022, it was still pretty exceptional. I wanted to ask you guys, there are a number of things locally I want to talk about. And I do want to get to James Cameron objecting to people who are objecting to his next Avatar movie being 3 hours long. And he's like, I don't understand. My kids will watch anything in 1 hour installments. He doesn't understand. We don't watch it that way anymore. Like, you got to give it to, if you give it to us in three hours, it better be three parts. We're not sitting down for a 3 hour movie anymore. We ran off Scorsese and The Irishman on Netflix because we're like, get out of here with your 3 hours. Right. Even if it's Pesci and De Niro, we don't want 3 hours of anything unless you make it three parts or eight parts. If you make it eight parts, we'll watch it in eight parts.
I'm watching a show right now, week to week, and it is excruciating. And it's, the show's good. It's not amazing, But I'm still, every time I finish an episode, I'm like, this is so stupid. I have to wait till next week. What an absolute waste of my time. Why didn't I just start this in August? I hate myself.
I have taken to leaving things until I can have all of them. I'm very upset right now, as I was with Ozark, with Better Call Saul, because I want all of them at once. We're feeding the instant gratification in a way that can't be put back in the tube. But as Witty says, it's hard to corral people. One of the many things I've learned during a brutal 24-month stretch, be careful, people, building a business during a pandemic.
I mean, hopefully we won't have another one.
Is there another business? Is there another? I have learned, more than anything else, there are dangers in letting everyone do what they want. And this, I bring you now, Stugatz, because Billy and Whittingham don't know where he is. He's driving 4 hours. He has promised 80 things, including 18 holes with Mahomes and Kelsey, just like he did all of last season. He promised us Kelsey every week last season was going to join us during the season. I haven't heard from Kelsey since the last time at Tahoe. What has he promised for content? Because last year, all we got was Chris Cody getting hit. Getting hit in the balls by Ray Romano's tee shot. It's
upper thigh.
And this, we've got Greg Cody from Tahoe, this.
I'm going to get some golf ASMR.
Oh, me.
That's what we got from a trip to Tahoe. Cody came in here today with his YI Auto, was born of. Me and Tony have started a committee, the Snubbed Tahoe Crew. I don't know whether Tony's the president or
I'm a two-time member.
Wait, you guys snubbed? I turned down my invitation. Tahoe, please.
Billy, you're laughing maniacally back there. Who else was snubbed?
Me.
I don't know how this trip got made. I don't know. What's funny about it is no one's ever invited me to Tahoe.
You want to go? You said no.
Invitation to Tahoe. I'm not making that up.
Dan, we sat outside the hey, Tahoe is available to you if you want to go. And you said I'd go home and I'd talk to whoever I got to talk to, and you never responded.
Who am I gonna talk to? There's only one person.
Well, you know.
Who else was snubbed? Who's in part of the Tahoe Snub Club? I don't know how this decision got made. I was not making these decisions.
All right. Tony and I are the founding members of the Lake Tahoe Snub
Club. No,
you went last year.
Let me explain.
How many free yearly trips to Tahoe can you possibly have?
More than one is the short answer. Tony and I are the charter members because we're the only two in this crowd who went last year and then were denied. Expected to go again. Hope to go again. Didn't happen. Snub Club.
How can you be the founding members when there are people here that never went?
Yeah. Well, because you don't know the experience like Tony and I did.
Exactly, because I never went.
I would argue that Chris Cody should be the president of the club, and he has it worse because he played last year, and now he has to go along and watch others play.
Yeah, that's
bad.
Wait,
he's not playing?
No, and he's the best golfer in the group by far.
Did Mike Ryan bump him?
Yes.
Yeah. See, now that's bullshit.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, how'd that happen?
That's really unjust.
Look, okay. I am actually the chair.
Unjust.
I am the chair of the Tahoe committee. So these are all my decisions. So you can have a go at me.
And I will.
If you like. I made decisions based off of who didn't go last year. So Stugatz had a... Stugatz plays because that's sort
he should
of
play.
Oh, but that, I think that, this yeah, is that, the last year for that if we don't get anything. Like, I believe if this is another series of lies.
But Stugatz isn't in charge of content. Stugatz is in charge of being Stugatz. That's
true. We have a crew that it doesn't seem anyone is in charge of the content based on what we got from Tahoe last year and based on what a waste of money most of these trips end up being.
But Dan, I mean, you said but for Greg Cody, you know, giving us sound that we've used multiple times, Ray Romano hitting Chris Cody, and various other things that an earthquake.
Yeah.
Like,
Chris doing Mystery Crate on gummies.
Right.
Like, try buying an earthquake. Can't do it.
But four. Yeah. Like, that's all content that we got out of it.
We were promised in the going to Tahoe that we would get the celebrity people who were playing in Tahoe.
That's true. Carlton was on last year.
Oh, we also got the story about Brian Kelly eating by himself alone at a table.
Great visual.
So fantastic. This year will be a test because we are moving broadcast location. So we are hoping that that will lead to an increase in quality. Today, this morning, it's currently 5:44 over there, but this morning is supposed to be the day that the quality of the interviews and the guests will improve. So we'll judge today on the basis of how that content goes. Now, Greg, to answer your question about being left out, I sincerely apologize that Stugatz did that to you.
What? Because I thought you made the
shot a minute ago. Passing the buck.
No, I am not passing the buck. What happened was last Tuesday, apparently, when you were here.
Why does Stugatz always have the buck?
Stugatz always has the buck. Because last Tuesday.
That buck was stolen.
Stugatz goes up to Greg and says, Greg, you're coming along this year, buddy. Like, he made you promises, right? That you'd be a part of the Tahoe clan yet again this year. Without ever consulting me, he knows that I'm in charge of this project. And so he never said to me, hey, I'm going to go tell Greg that he's playing. I would have said to him, unfortunately, we don't have a spot for Greg to go this year. And I apologize that your hopes were brought up there. And you were replaced with other people who got the chance to go this year.
No, I get it. I mean, it's a golf tournament, so one of the people playing in it naturally should be someone who really doesn't play golf at all. I understand that.
Right. Yeah.
Harsh.
I was told that
that was too harsh.
I was told that one of the members is already up this morning. And last night, from my understanding, based on the schedule, was one of the big events, which was the welcome party with all the celebrities.
Last year, they saw Brian Kelly.
So we could...
Last year, also, this is where Stugatz got his hug from Aaron Rodgers, too, correct?
Yeah, who now has a new tattoo. We can get to that later.
Do you know where Stugatz is? Have you spoken? You, in charge of wrangling Stugatz, do you know if he's on the highway? Do you know if he's there yet?
Last I heard from Chris Cody, who's there, who... I was told was there to produce, said that he heard that Stugatz was an hour away still, and that was at like 8 or 9 o'clock Eastern. So I don't know that he even made the welcome party.
He missed all of the interviews that were set up for yesterday, right? He missed all of those. There were like 5:30 interviews. There was a shotgun start, something that was happening at 5:30.
That's today. Yesterday was the welcome party where you can lay some groundwork. There's celebrities everywhere.
There's
Brian Kelly eating brisket. That is essentially what there's an introductory meeting as well where Justin Timberlake will stand in the back of the room and crack wise. There's a big presentation. There's a magician. There's all kinds of laying the groundwork for celebrities that'll be there.
The Dead show was canceled last night, so that might be why there was a late start. But the rest of their tour is on as scheduled. They did a free airing of the Wrigley Field show that me and Stugatz saw a few weeks ago last night on their website.
Where was the Dead show that was supposed to be last night?
Saratoga Springs, New York.
Oh, okay. So he's heading in the exact opposite.
I also should let you guys know, they have a doubleheader coming up in New York. Stugatz will most certainly be at, so we should just mark that off in the calendar right now.
Okay, good. He said Chris, he was going to that. Crack-wise... Is that what I just heard?
Yeah, crack-wise.
Right. He was cracking wise.
You go there, you crack-wise.
Wise
Cody
cracks?
Chris Cody is crack-wise.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Justin Timberlake loves to be the joke maker in the back of the room. He was the absolutely voted class clown in high school. I can assure you of that.
He was getting clowned on Twitter recently for that dance video that went viral and everyone was making fun of him. Do you guys see that?
No.
Oh.
It looked like him?
Well, it was him dancing at a concert and someone tweeted it and was like, I can't believe this man... like ruined Janet Jackson's career or something like that.
Wow.
And it had like 100,000 retweets.
But
and
he
it
must
was
have
him.
Been dancing well, correct? He
no,
dances well.
That was, the point of the video was like, he wasn't dancing that well.
Is he not? Wait, put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Is Justin Timberlake a good dancer? I simply assume that he dances well. Billy, what can you tell me before I get to the local stuff today? Where you are with what Stugatz has promised, what you expect to get made by Stugatz, and if you expect Stugatz to show up anywhere where he has promised to show up.
So you and I and Witty are viewing this differently, right? You say what Stugatz has promised, where I view it as what Stugatz has threatened me he's going to do. Because what he laid out to me on Tuesday was 4 days of recording, which, by the way, is every time he goes out of town and he feels some sense of guilt. He's like, buddy... we're going to record a lot this week. And he sends out like 4 days of planned recordings. That's going to take up, like, if they come true, 20 hours of my day every single day, to which I want to respond like, Scott's like, I still work today. Like, I still have the job that I did today. And like, I'm not going to be around at 9 p.m. Eastern to be doing these things. Like, but I also know that it's not going to happen. So I don't have that argument with him. Right. So what I was promised or told was on tap, probably wouldn't get you too excited, was a Hank Goldberg memorial stupidity with Josh Darrow.
Wow, roaming the sidelines.
And Mabee Allison, who I went and reached out to her, and I said, are you part of this thing? And she said, absolutely not. I said, okay, well, I guess that's not happening. And then I think he said, we're going to have plenty of stuff in Tahoe. Don't even worry about it, but no specifics. And I said, well, just let me know your schedule so I know, because like I had a guest booker reach out with a guest that could be available today, like potentially in that window. And he's like, oh, I still don't know my tea time. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I heard your tea time was 1 o'clock local time for you, but like, not going to argue with you on this. Like, if you don't know your tea time, okay, we don't know your tea time. So I don't know. I don't know what we're going to get today.
Okay, great.
Something maybe, potentially.
Something maybe is the greatest of promises.
But that's why I'm telling you, someone's already up over there, and we can kind of check in and see what it is that's on tap today, because I'm told that this is the person who is in charge, which sounds good until you hear the name is Lewis. And then it's kind of like, okay.
I don't want to talk to Lewis.
Okay, good.
And you need to stop inviting Lewis. Lewis's commentary to the microphone when he's nowhere near a microphone or in another state.
Well, no, he can call in. He can tell us what happened at the party last night.
I appreciate you offering, but
no, thank
you. What
was Brian Kelly eating? Was there magicians?
No, I don't want any commentary from Lewis.
Oh, wait. Actually, Dan, I have a quick update. Not from Lewis. It's from Lewis via Tony. Aaron Rodgers was showing off his tattoo last night to everybody, telling them about it. Yep.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
Mike, Marty Schottenheimer passed away.
Stugatz.
Why do you sound so happy?
How did you say that?
Yeah,
so
you're very excited.
I was wrong tone.
I was not excited.
What happened?
Unbelievable.
I was merely pointing out that a Browns legend had passed away.
Hold on. That was unbelievable.
Guys, Marty Schottenheimer died.
Hold on.
And maybe the greatest coach to never win a Super Bowl.
Okay, I mean. Wait a minute. Let's just settle down.
Do you hear?
This is the Don Levitar Show with the Stugatz.
Tony came in today, and there's a lot I want to get to, because it doesn't appear the Miami Heat have enough for Kevin Durant. Well, they do have enough if there wasn't a trade problem with Ben Simmons on their roster. And if there
weren't... Dumbass rule.
If there weren't... Oh,
I mean, why? Again, with these rules. And it's not just the Heat, by the way. With Bam, it's other teams that have these designated player rookie extensions.
Crazy.
Who was this for?
Dumb rule.
Like, can you imagine trying to explain to a non-in-the-weeds basketball fan, this is why your team can't trade for Bam Adebayo, or for Kevin Durant, because of designated player extensions? Who decided that was a palatable way to construct a sports league?
For those who do not know, the Miami Heat cannot trade Bam to the Nets because they already have Ben Simmons on the roster. And if they wanted to trade Bam for Kevin Durant, it has to go through a third team. The Miami Heat do have enough to get Kevin Durant, but not if the Nets don't get Bam, and not if Kevin Durant wants to come here and play with Bam. And when you're talking about an anonymous GM being quoted as saying, because the Heat's offer is simply not good enough. It can't be good enough. But when you're talking about Ayton, Bridges, you're talking about five picks, a according to Jake Fisher, an anonymous GM, saying five picks, that's not even enough. That what it's going to take a guy who is never available, never asking for a trade, is some sort of seismic offer. It's not, Heat fans are not going to get what they're used to getting, which is we get Shaq for a poo-poo platter. You cannot get this guy for a poo-poo platter that doesn't hurt so much where you're like, hey, just Duncan and Tyler, is that enough? That's not what's getting you Kevin Durant. It's not going to be enough.
I think the Heat do have enough if they could trade Bam. If you trade, because what's been out there is two All-Stars under 25. And the Heat can get most of the way there. If Tyler Hero is the second young prospect in a trade that also includes Bam, that will also include maybe Duncan Robinson to make salaries work, and three unprotected first-round picks, probably a swap or two, maybe you have to go find a little bit more from another team. Maybe you throw Gabe Vincent in the trade. But I think the Heat could get most of the way there if they could include Bam. But you mentioned also that Sam Amick report from The Athletic that said that Kevin Durant wants to play with all of Jimmy Butler, right, Bam Adebayo, and Kyle Lowry. Dude, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, really? Like, why Lowry? Like,
how do you think that the Heat are going to trade for you if they're keeping all these players?
The information that I have is 10 days old, so perhaps it is not useful to you. But the Heat were not willing to send away their defense and everything else to leave Jimmy Butler and Kevin Durant standing next to each other and a bunch of mismatch pieces that they would have to do the same thing they did in 2010 with a 33-year-old Kevin Durant. They weren't ready and willing to blow up the entirety of a team that got a bounce from the finals in exchange for a 33-year-old Kevin Durant that's going to cost, it would appear, a haul that the Heat cannot afford and would not be willing to part with if they could afford it through three teams. And what it leaves them with is a decimation of everything they constructed, and only Jimmy Butler getting paid $50 million in 4 years and Kevin Durant getting paid God knows how much in 4 years. And now you've got two 36-year-olds making $50 million and you can't put anything around them.
So you're saying that the Heat would not do the Durant trade if it cost them everything?
That is what my information was 10 days ago. And what I think has happened since is the information I had then was ahead of the curve. And now it's well behind the curve because in the last 10 days, there's now the frenzy of the Nets realizing, wait a minute, this isn't going to be enough. We might go to training camp with whatever our headaches are because we can't go from Harden, Kyrie, and Durant to just taking poo-poo platters to get out from under it when we have trade assets that have huge value. We're not just going to fold our hand for Kevin Durant and allow him to continue hurting our organization by requesting a trade. They're not going to have the punctuation on that experiment, one of the colossal failures and embarrassments in the history of franchise creation. They are not going to have it be punctuated by, and at the very end, we were so sick of them that we got Westbrook, Simmons as our backcourt, and we couldn't get anything for one of the greatest players who's ever played.
I don't think that's going to be the case, though. I think they're going to get a ton for Kevin Durant if they decide to trade him. I mean, if Rudy Gobert is worth three unprotected first-round picks and a top five protected
first-round pick. Well, I think all my information changed right there, though. I think the asking price on everything, I thought the Heat thought what they were in the game until they saw what Gobert went for.
Right.
And then they're like, wait a minute. This is going to take an insane package that we've never seen before in this sport.
I'm surprised, though, to hear that the Heat wouldn't part ways with that, because if you do Bam, Hero, Gabe Vincent, and all your first-round picks, I think that's a championship team. Like, I think you can build enough around it. They kept Victor Oladipo. You bring back Dwayne Dedman. Like, you have, I think, enough to go and win a championship. And
they
were not
willing to do that 10 days ago. They were...
Mm-hmm.
Dedman is back. Cody was making fun of it when he came in here today. 2 years. I'm sure people listening to this are laughing at what you're saying. Dedman is back. So I guess we could write the headlines, Dedman not walking.
Yeah, Dedman is back, and they re-signed Caleb Martin. That in and of itself is not a big free agency.
They're weaker, and all four of the teams that they're competing with at the top of the conference are better than they were, including Philadelphia with P.J. Tucker, who said one of the most laughable things I've seen from a departing free agent: Miami will always forever be my home.
That was a year of 5 minutes.
The Jimmy Butler comment, by the way, on his Instagram post was, it makes me wonder how difficult being a friend or teammate of Jimmy Butler is.
Oh, I thought he was fooling around.
I know, but to completely part with the, oh, I'll miss you, buddy, or whatever, like, and just bleep you and bleep Joel Embiid. I know he's fooling around, but to even, like, put that out there, to me, would suggest that he has no problem saying things like that behind the scenes.
But he's
like,
joking. I think he's joking.
Embiid are tight. He and Embiid are tight. That's an inside joke.
I understand, but it sheds insight into what Jimmy Butler is like as a coworker.
What are you rolling your eyes about, Jessica?
You don't, like, kind of jokingly talk shit to your friends?
I mean, like, not as a NBA superstar where everything gets right into, but, like, I don't tell, like, if Tony ever left and said, you know, if he goes to the Ringer and says, oh, I'll miss the Lebatard show, had a great time in Miami, I don't think I'd put in his Instagram comments, f*** you, and f*** Joel Embiid, too. Like, I
certainly would.
This explains why you don't have the competitive spirit of Jimmy Butler.
If Tony went to the Ringer, you would say it about Joel Embiid, because it's like a strange...
You and Joel Embiid.
What a non sequitur.
Speaking of Tony, he came in here today a bit ravaged. Billy, what are you... You're doing a private show with Tony.
We're always doing a private show back there,
you're laughing the entire time. Can you share with me whatever the show is you're doing with Tony that's so funny?
I was trying to get the information to pass it along to you, because this morning, right before we went on air, and it's the first time I've ever done it, I literally turned to Tony and go, you. And I was trying to remember what it was that he said to me that instigated. It was not high. It was
not editing this hour.
You said something, and I was like, this guy's just starting with me today. He's starting to push my buttons. And I just turned to him with a big smile on my face. And I go, f*** you. And then I'm like, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
I'm sorry. An immediate regret.
I should have said that.
This is you wading into the waters Whittingham's uncomfortable with, where you're like, let's see how this feels being Jimmy Butler for a minute. Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't like it. It didn't feel right.
I'm sorry. I'm so cruel. Let me see. Jimmy Butler's gotten used to however that feels, to run around telling everyone to bleep off, and still everyone's kissing your ass. Everyone's giving you $50 million 4 years from now because you get away with telling everybody to bleep off. But I do feel like this is just the way the locker room, this passes for intimacy in the locker room.
Well, the thing is that today started with me like overhearing Tony walking in and just making a million excuses about why it is that he lost that debate yesterday to the guest.
Yeah. I didn't lose
the debate.
He came
in, he's
debate.
Like, Dan... And I'm betray your confidence. I don't care. He's like, Dan, Jim DeRogatis is full of shit. And I'm like, whoa, where was this yesterday?
I got ambushed yesterday, first off. Dan, go ahead. Do you want to lay it out so I can explain my part?
I will lay it out, but that is how I was greeted. And I had the same reaction to Tony, which was, oh, he's been stewing in this one all night. Because yesterday on the show, unexpectedly,
feel good, does it?
I threw the show to him. First of all, the thing that felt good yesterday to Tony, the thing that felt good yesterday to Tony is the revelation that Adam McKay, the revelation that made everyone in the room jealous, which is Adam McKay would like to executive produce a television show or something that stars Juju and Tony. Here's Tony's on-air reaction to that news, which includes a squealing sound that I imagine Stugatz dreams about late at night.
He is not here to learn that Adam McKay told me that he wants to executive produce a Juju and Tony show.
Wow!
That's amazing.
That was a delighted Tony. Tony fancies himself as swaggering, cool, and walking into every room with grace and handsomeness. And this is what happened when he learned of a Juju Tony show.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Tony, what happened yesterday is that I put you in the unfair position without any warning of, please be our hip hop guy, the way that Juju and you are our hip hop guys. And Juju was off. It was his birthday yesterday. And so I threw the show to you. And then you broke down very, very superficially the new Kendrick Lamar album. And then a music journalist came at you with something you were not expecting, which is he explained to you, I'm objecting to homophobia and misogyny in hip hop. I don't like what Kendrick has done here. And you were not ready for it. And it wasn't a great position to be put in.
The problem was he said he had 30 seconds, and then that's what he led off with, misogyny and homophobia. And I was like, okay, great, how about this? And then he steamrolled me for like another 20 seconds, said, bye, I got to talk to Germany. So when you lay on, hey, I got to, you know, I have a problem with misogyny and homophobia in hip hop, that's a bit of a longer conversation that me and you need to have, not 30 seconds. Hey, Kodak Black was on the album. What do you think about it, right? And then he was, you know, talking about, obviously, there's a bit of homophobia in a certain song. And then I went back and listened to said song on the way in this morning three times. And yes, he does.
because again, this kept
preparing for this rebuttal.
It kept him up, and I can understand how it would. It all of it was. I was not expecting it either. The revelation that hip hop is replete with misogyny and a bunch of different things, homophobia. But you're saying that this is something. But because Kendrick Lamar is an artist. Mm-hmm. And because he's better than most artistically, that's a $5 fine for me.
That's a big time. Wow.
He's better artistically than most of the hip hop guys. My question to you is, in those 5 minutes, mm-hmm. how much pain were you in and how much did it haunt you over the course of the evening?
The whole night, which is why I came in this morning like I'm going to have a blowtorch ready for Dear Gaddis, because I got to tell Dan that... You know, we live in a nuanced world, and there's context to a lot of the stuff that we talk about, right? And if we're going to have a conversation about homophobia and hip-hop, I get it. I'm here for it. Like, I want to have that conversation because it's been replete with it for a long time. This song in particular is interesting to me because he talks about how two family members of his cousin and his aunt, both transition into different genders. So for me, I'm listening to it. I'm like, okay, he's talking about a personal experience. And then, yes, he does say a gay slur, the F word, but he's talking about it in the past tense of what he used to say before he understood what the ramifications of that word meant to his family, to his individual people in his family that were transitioning. Like, it's a very nuanced conversation to have, and it's not for 30 seconds to steamroll me and then talk to somebody in Germany.
I've not heard the song, so I have to sit out whether or not he's doing artfully the use of a word that's not for him to use, as Ice Cube went on Bill Maher and took away Bill Maher's ability to say the N-word, saying it's not yours, you don't get to use it. But I have not heard the song, and so I don't know if Kendrick Lamar was able to pull off the degree of difficulty of let me look back at my previous self and criticize him for bad language in the name of art. But I'm more interested in you being haunted by the way all of that went. After making the sound that I have put on here before, which I believe is the goofiest sound that anyone around here has ever made in delight when tickled by someone tickling their ego.
That's amazing. Yeah.
The sound before that's amazing was a giggle. He giggled.
Wow.
It was joyous.
That's amazing.
And Billy has not been the same since because he doesn't know how to feel about whether or not Tony deserves this shot with
Adam.
Oh,
he doesn't, but I know he doesn't.
What is that supposed to mean? You tried to also sow division between me and my brother Juju Gotti.
I would never.
Oh, yeah, right, please. You were trying to sow division saying, well, his name is first. And I'm like,
I didn't say
and?
That wasn't me.
Oh, no?
That wasn't me. That was Witty or someone else. I didn't say that his name was first.
Yeah, Witty has been assailing my character the last like month and a half. Yeah. And he looks like a cop today, not Steven Spielberg.
I really don't understand.
Wait, undercover cop.
Yeah. You guys are around them more in
worst
that.
Worst undercover cop of all time.
Yeah.
He really.
Very obvious.
He's infiltrating a high school hallway.
Narc.
Looking for. That's right.
I also think his glasses. I think his glasses have like the camera in the middle of it. Yeah. But just like regularly. Like it looks like the spy glasses that they sell at the Sharper Image. You know.
You guys doing weed?
Really? Where can I get some marijuana? Any idea?
Like Steve Buscemi in that meme, like, hello, fellow kids.
Can you guys tell me secretly, because I don't know the private show that Billy's always having with Tony and Lewis where they're roaring with laughter. It seems like a great show. I'd really like to listen to it. What is the relationship for real between Billy and Tony and Lewis? Because it seems like he loves them and really, really hates them.
That's, I think, exactly it. I think you've nailed it. They have an incredible interpersonal dynamic where I think they exchange their love for one another through bile and hatred.
Is it how I feel about Cody?
Greg or Chris?
Either. Both.
I mean, I could blame him for Chris.
You really could. I got no alibi.
Good shout.
I was there.
But Greg is accomplished. Greg should be revered and respected.
Thank you, Billy.
Tony shouldn't, you know?
Well, I don't think Adam McKay is making a show that would respect Tony. I don't think that one of the comedy geniuses of our time is looking at Tony and saying, you know what I've got to do here? I've got to find maximum respect for this guy so I can frame him. So I can frame him in a way that makes him to America someone to be held in the highest esteem where art is made.
But Dan, here's the thing. It's chess, not checkers, right? And even if I get made fun of, like I do on this show, what happens? Notoriety grows. People start to like it. People are like, hey, this guy's kind of funny. What's happening here? Bam. There it is.
Agreed. I think anybody in our audience who would be interested in entertainment would take whatever the mockery is in exchange for the currency of the fame.
You know what I was telling him?
And the bucks.
You know what I was telling him the other day? You know how he's been playing basketball with all these old guys to feel better about himself?
That's not true.
So he did it. He did it with McGill. McGill schooled him. He played with Bill Lawrence recently. And he was selling this Whopper the other day, a tall tale across the hall about how he had a chance to block Bill Lawrence, but he didn't because he didn't want the story to come out about how I don't even know what the web he was spinning that day was. But I was like, you know what you need to do? Like, if you really want to make an impression on Bill Lawrence, you need to turn very quickly and break his nose with your elbow. Like, that story would be incredible and he would never forget it. Like, that's what you need to do. Be like, no, and he's like, pretending like he's tiptoeing around Bill Lawrence, and that's why he's losing to him because he's going to get a show on.
I haven't lost to Bill Lawrence. First of all, the point that I was making to Billy yesterday, he absolutely butchered. Was obviously Bill's an older guy. I do play with some of the older guys that are there, right? Bill's one of the older guys, but he's a dog. He plays really well. Low post, almost low post. He's throwing bows. He's going to reverse. Like, he's a really good player. I also do feel a sense of, like, I don't want to hurt him if I do something that would be a normal basketball play, but since he's a little older, maybe come across as dirty or something. Like, Bill's my friend. Like, that's
all right. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is Tony telling the truth when he says he did not block Bill Lawrence's shot? Actually, another way. Let's do this another way. Did Tony not block Bill Lawrence's shot because he thinks he's the next Ted Lasso?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's not checkers, guys.
So it is that. Okay, so you think that Bill Lawrence might make you the next center. I mean, now that there's a bidding war for the Juju and Tony show,
I like it.
You can you think that not blocking his shot will curry favor with him so that he might put you in his next project, which is filming locally in Miami. Very good. It's a smart play by you. There's a little bit of Stugatz in everybody.
He actually told me that he got a role in Bill Lawrence's next thing.
Stugatz did?
Yeah.
No.
He said he was talking to him about it.
No, he wants to be in Ted Lasso, not in the next thing.
No way.
Stugatz has said, oh, yeah, buddy, I'm working with Bill Lawrence right now to try and get in his season 3 of Ted Lasso. Need another American character. Yeah, we don't have enough with Jason Sudeikis and Coach Beard. And we got to have more American characters. Stugatz is what's missing. Manager of Burnley, Stugatz.
Yeah, qualified coaches in Ted Lasso.
The best thing about it, because now that you're talking it out more, I remember the story better. The best thing about it is, like, so I was pitching him a character. It was going to be this, former lacrosse coach who now doesn't have a team to coach. And I go, that's you. You're just pitching yourself. It's like, yeah, but like every team needs a coach, buddy. It'll be fine.
True. You guys, I realized something the other day when talking to a friend of mine who had his life ruined by somebody, just ruined. This lying is a pathology, correct? Like, this is a pathological liar. It is something that we do around here as a joke, fooling around, but it's also true. Stugatz has a, like, if we were to diagnose him, it would be, if somebody can clinically learn that he is a pathological liar, that even when the truth will suffice, he will lie because there's something in there that makes him lie because he needs to lie about everything.
Yeah, can't control himself.
In my undercover cop mode today, I'm really starting to learn the tricks of the trade. I think I probably came into this environment a little bit too wide-eyed, I believe, Stugatz, on a lot of occasions at the beginning. And now I start to recognize when he leaves me breadcrumbs. Like, I should have recognized some of them when he up and left on a Sunday afternoon to California and told us that we were not going to have a co-host the next day because he was just going to California. I should have recognized them. And now I think I'm starting to see the signs of when he's doing a thing. Like, for example, he's starting to be like, hey, so on Friday in Lake Tahoe, like, When's the latest that I have to be there? It's because he's planning an exit. Yeah. He's planning an exit. Hopefully, we'll get a lot of shit before then. He's planning an exit in Lake Tahoe, and I'm on to him.
Okay, you are not a good private investigator. You're on to him very late. My question to the group...
We've been telling you this for four days.
You're saying you're on to him, and you've already been embarrassed, and he's not respecting you, and he's going to continue to try and test these boundaries, and he's not going to Tahoe next year if we don't get something more than a golf shot that hits somebody in the balls. But
we need a bigger celebrity than Ray Romano to hit Chris in the leg with a golf ball, I think. And then we'll be good for next year. Greg, you can go. Roy, you can go.
Yes.
Billy and I will still probably sit it out. It's kind of just a farm.
You and me, Roy.
Damn right.
Let's go.
I'll be your caddy.
Are you guys willing to put forth publicly the idea that he can be diagnosed as a pathological liar? Is this are you guys willing? Because I say pathological liar, now all of a sudden it's not quite as charming. I don't believe...
Well, that is the reason why I wouldn't say it's pathological, because I still find him so charming.
Yeah.
Even though he's lying to my face, I know he's scheming,
but that doesn't make it not pathological lying. It just makes you the rationalizer who is allowing him to get away with the pathological lies, and all of us.
To be pathological, don't you have to believe your own lies as the truth? Because I don't think that he does. I think that he's aware of what... He's a story... Let's rephrase it.
Well, do you guys think
he's a storyteller?
Okay, but you guys think that Trump is a pathological liar, correct?
Like, yes, absolutely. Yes.
I would say narcissistic, which probably goes hand in hand. Stugatz, I don't believe, has that much narcissism in him. Maybe he does. I just feel like he is very manipulative, and he will charm you to be able to get what he wants out of you.
I think of him like William Shakespeare. Wow. You know what I mean?
Wow.
He's just someone that comes and he tells tales that entertain the masses.
A bard?
Yeah, exactly.
A bard. In a language no one can understand.
Exactly.
I was not expecting a 1700s word bard.
Put it on the poll. Is Stugatz a bard?
Is Stugatz a bard?
Greg Cody just slayed with that joke. Give him the laugh.
It was a great joke. Deserve it. Which joke? The one about in a language no one understands.
Oh, right. Yes.
It's a Shakespearean language that no one understands. Stugatz, we should figure out how to make Stugatz a modern day Shakespearean character. speaking a language that none of us understand, telling stories that are in no way true. That 200 years from now, when people see what we've made of America, he will pass for our greatest scholar. When all of us are breathing out of a tube through the bottom of the ocean and what remains of America.
I have a question, Billy. So you do think Stugatz is a little narcissistic?
I mean,
he just made a sound that couldn't be totally understood. He's got his own language back there. I don't think that he said that. He just
Sometimes
made a sound.
Sometimes I just make noises. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But you have the cleanest view of him.
Yeah.
You're the one who has the most information on dealing with him. Whittingham's new to this game.
No, well, he's learned not to give me information. And we had a heart-to-heart after his last disappearance where I said, Stugatz, like, I get the feeling that everybody thinks that I knew you were going to disappear. Like, I was getting, like, this feeling, like, if almost like I was complicit on this disappearance of yours, and I was not.
Have you ever gotten blamed? I don't think anybody blames
you.
No, not
blamed.
Nobody can corral him.
No, not blamed. But I came in, and I'm like, it just seemed like he just disappeared. I was like, you know where Stugatz is? I'm like, no, I thought he was here today. And I'm like,
you
well,
found out later than everyone else.
Yeah.
Literally the last one to find out that he was not coming in.
Well, yeah, so I had a serious conversation, a heart-to-heart with Stugatz, in which I told him, I go, thank you for not telling me you were going to do that, because, like, I don't want to be complicit in these things. I go, just, and he's like, don't worry, buddy, I won't tell you that much moving forward. I'm like, no. Stugatz, let me know what I need to know, but don't let me know enough where I'm either complicit or I'm going to have to, you know, testify against you. Like, that's the line.
Under oath.
Give me information that's beneficial, but not that can be used against you, because I don't want to be the one that has to put you away.
But this is where the narcissism kills you. He does not consider how anything affects anybody other than him. This might not be, that sounds to me like textbook narcissism. I don't think I'd accuse Stugatz of general narcissism, but this is it. He is in no way, when he is making his plans, considering, not for one dollop of a percentage, not just us, you in any way or how it affects you.
Well, I mean, He did have grandiose plans of everything he wanted to record this week, but I don't think he took into account how little time he was going to have to do all of those things.
He didn't take into account that you're not available at midnight when he wants to do them.
I mean, but he's not going to be like, okay, I know how the schedule works. I know what time his tea time is, even though he told me he didn't know what time it was. I know it's at 1 o'clock local time, right? I know after 1 o'clock local time today, he's done for the day. Like, he's going to be, like, everything has to be done before then, but we're on the air before then. And I know that he's trying to get out early tomorrow. So, like, when I see the 50 things that he's like, let's do all these things, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, this one's a baby. This one's probably not going to happen. So, like, I kind of know. I think he has good intentions. I just think that sometimes the planning and the execution is where things get a little, you know.
Well, I think he tells you what you want to hear, which is, I'm available. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do all these things that are going to make Billy happy, make the company happy. But then he really can't follow through on all of them because he's trying to just make everyone happy. But he really only cares about what will make him happy, which is then golfing, smoking a cigarette, and having a beer and going to bed.
I think you hit upon something when you said
smoking a dog walker.
He tells people what they want to hear. He's a self-aggrandizing liar, not a hurtful liar. And the example I would use is, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he's like, buddy, you got to go to Lake Tahoe again. I want you in my playing group. You'll definitely be there. I'm going to make it happen for you. So in that moment, he feels like a big shot. He makes me feel very good. 100%. And then nothing comes of it.
Greg, yes, I'm at the Grateful Dead concert, and he's like, "Smitty, I'm gonna call you. Smitty, we'll meet up. Smitty, this." And then I'm there, and I'm like, "Where are your seats?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm in the second row, and I can't leave. Smitty, I'll talk to you later." I'm like, "Okay, bye."
I have never in my life had any relationship with anyone that I can say this about. The words mean nothing. Whatever the word is, a man is only as good as his word. Stugatz's word is not true.
Oh, I think he means well.
Not the point. The word is not true. I don't want to talk about the intent. The words coming out of his mouth, none of them matter. Man, he argued earlier this week every side of Freddie Freeman, and he doesn't give a single solitary bleep about anything happening with said Freddie Freeman, but took every position because he knows the words don't have any consequences. It's just an avalanche stream tapestry of lies, and everyone will accept it, and he will go to Tahoe with a free trip where he makes his own rules, and we don't get any content if Cody doesn't flub a shot.
Or if Ray Romano doesn't flub a shot. Yeah.
That's what we're going to promise you, Kelsey and Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers.
He's following them today for 18 holes. That's what he promised Whitty.
That's exciting.
Kelsey and Mahomes.
This has been 2 years of promises that he's going to be golfing with Mahomes and he's going to bring him over, right?
That's not how it works. You can't just follow Mahomes for 18 holes.
I bought equipment so that Stugatz could do this. Out of my own pocket.
Last year you were with him.
Expensive.
You spent your own money on company stuff? Oh, what are you thinking? Expense it right now. Expense it. Go open your laptop.
I don't have my laptop.
You did. You didn't have Stugatz last year either. You bought the equipment. No.
Screenshot those receipts.
Yeah, so I have like portable equipment so that it would sound good. I could give Stugatz a lav mic so he doesn't even have to walk around holding a microphone. He's just talking into a mic, although I think that microphone would explode with how loud he is.
Why is he always so loud?
He's so loud! But I bought all this shit so that he can walk around a golf course with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. And then, of course, it happened because why the hell would it happen? Because, again, to Greg's point, he's like, he thinks I can just call the tournament organizers and be like, hey, this nationally televised product on NBC, can I just make a complete mess of it? No. Okay.
Speaking of lying, I believe, you mentioned Hank Goldberg earlier, Billy, I believe that Greg Cody has been turning the volume up as one must in times of death to say things about Hank Goldberg that he does not actually believe in the name of being someone who looks like he is publicly kind to someone who has just passed away and has to defer and kneel at the altar. So I want to know what the truth is, not what you've written or what you've said. You had an old-timey week this week. You went on Deadline. You wrote a Deadline column off a Marlins game off an ace.
Yes, Sandy Alcantara.
I'm not sure that's how his name is pronounced. But
Alcantara.
No, I just don't know.
Alcantara.
That's the way that it's been Americanized. I'd like to ask him what his name actually is. Right.
Who would have thought that the Marlins would have two column-worthy games on back-to-back nights?
I know.
Could have gone last night for the Shohei game.
I was going to go to both in a row, but I couldn't take two Marlins columns in a row. I just couldn't. My career couldn't take it. No, seriously.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.